Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
We got your favorite sports and we got your favorite team.
Big Red, go Cats.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Way out in California, but we represent the scene.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Big Red,
go Cats. Pat, Joe, and Tweety are here to make some noise. We got a podcast. We're based at Galliano and Boyd. Big Red,
go Cats.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Big Red,
go Cats.
Yeah.
Big Red,
go
Welcome to the Big Red Cobcast. I'm Pat.
I'm Joe. That's it for now. We may have something my brother jump in, but that's that's always up in the air. We'll see. He's not reliable in that way.
I tried a Tweety impression, but I think everyone knew.
Oh, is that what that was there?
Yeah.
Okay. He usually gets a couple more syllables, but it's the grunt was right. You have to add a syllable maybe in the grunt. You just gave it. He's like, if there's a word there.
It actually just sounded like my dad when he was an umpire.
I used to like being an umpire. I only did it for a couple years. It was because I always liked the umpire we had in my little league. I was the catcher, and we'd have conversations and stuff. And then
that's a mark of a good catcher.
Because I had, what, talking to the umpire a lot?
Oh, yeah. Forging a good relationship with the home plate umpire. That's a good catcher move.
He called me Hot Dog all the time. Probably because he didn't know my name, but also I was a bit of a wise ass, unsurprisingly. Yeah.
When I was a catcher, I got pegged in the jaw with a face, or it pegged in the jaw with a ball, not from the pitcher. But I threw the mask off and a guy was coming home from third and the guy gunning it from shortstop. Yeah, it caught me in the jaw and had to go do some emergency dentistry in Nebraska City.
Oh, my God.
Because we called the Auburn, one of the Auburn dentists, and he's like, I'm on vacation. And so then we called a Nebraska City dentist and he's like, I'll make him not feel so bad for the evening, but I'm not gonna do anything too extensive. Because I've been drinking wine, and so
that's,
I'm like,
fair.
All right, I guess that works. So then we came back in like that Saturday, but we were playing a doubleheader. Like, we come back from Nebraska City after he basically just deadens my face,
Novocaine's your face.
Yeah, and I get back there and, like, the coach then is like, go out to left field. I'm like, what? I didn't bring my glove back from the car. And so the only other guy on the bench was a lefty. So I had to borrow his glove. And I was like, just don't hit it to me. Don't hit it to me. Don't hit it to me.
Amazing.
And then I was the final out, and I just gave like three pretty half-hearted swings, and the coach is like, we look like we didn't want to be up there at the end. I was like, I didn't. I really didn't.
I mean, it's amazing. What you had to play a game after getting your face smashed?
Yeah. Like, I'm just spitting out like fractions of teeth after catching a ball in the face. Yeah.
I ended up being the catcher because our regular catcher, I think I was like the shortstop. And of course I was a wise ass, but I was also very small. And our regular catcher sliced his hand somehow and was gone for the year. So the coach was like, so we're going to need a catcher. And I was probably the shortest guy on the team. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. Thinking he wouldn't put me at catcher. And he's like, all right. And I never took the gear off because I was so small. I needed it all if there was anything. And I remember there was this kid, Dave Shinella, who was like a really good athlete. His dad was the varsity coach of the basketball team. But he was always the kind of kid that if he made a mistake, he stays on the ground with an ankle injury for like 3 minutes, you know, as if,
yeah.
Oh, he never turned it over. It was because of an injury. And one of my highlights is he tried to jump over me coming from third to home. Like, you know, like to leap over to get home plate. And I just got the glove on his stomach and just flung him, you know, like took his own momentum and flung him over home plate. And of course he just crushes in a pile and pretend, you know, like, dude, you're all right. We're kids.
I love the perfectly executed jump over the catcher move, but in most leagues that is illegal. And yeah. So like someone does a cool feat of athleticism like that and you're out. It's the same thing like with high school football too. You can't hurdle a guy because they're just trying to protect kids.
Right.
But then when somebody like perfectly executes it, you're like, oh, come on. Like,
right. Because there are some athletes.
That kid doesn't deserve to be penalized 15 yards because that was cool as hell.
Well, it's like, if you're a high school kid and you can pull it off, you should be able to. And any high school kid who can't pull it off ends up getting crushed. And that's really the reason they have the rule is there's more who can't than who can.
Was it?
But yeah, you got to do
it. No, Sean Moreno, who destroyed his knee doing that.
Was he at Georgia?
Yeah,
possibly.
It was either him or Gurley.
While he was up in the air.
I might have been even just his landing. Well, McGahee, when he went airborne and then he got hit while he was. And that was gross.
Oh, very gross. Very gross. Frank Gore had a bad knee injury.
Well, Frank Gore had like 9,000 knee injuries.
Yeah, it is amazing. He's a bionic man. Whatever they put in his knees, whatever cadaver that donated that was a strong-ass cadaver.
Well, like his entire college career, like he didn't really have a college career because he kept tearing his knees. And then it started with the beginning of his pro career too. And you're just like, how did he end up being one of the longest tenured running backs in NFL history? It gives me hope. Why can't I think of his name now? The kid from Georgia.
Sevion Morrison?
No. He's from Oklahoma. The kid from Georgia who blew out his knee a bunch of times.
Yes. Not Morrison. The other running back who's supposed to be, for God's sake.
I know. This feels like the ultimate blank. And everyone is yelling
the name.
Their Spotify as they listen to this, like, you idiots. It's
the name is
Ronald Tompkins.
That was just a quiz for everybody.
I didn't get it searched yet. That did finally
came out of the head of my head. Pat the Stat.
Speaking of Ronald Tompkins and the Nebraska football team, you know, the thing that this podcast is supposed to be about. It must just be me. I was a guest on a podcast last night that was supposed to theoretically be like a loosely comedy based podcast. The first hour was like sports, like 45 minutes of that was Nebraska high school sports and 15 of it was like Huskers. And then we got into some loose comedy talk afterward. I was like, oh, okay, we finally got there. He listens to this, by the way, the host of it. I wish I could remember the name of the podcast, but so I could give him a plug, but I always forget.
Well, look on our Twitter, because that's where the exchange will probably happen. Like, Pat, my name is this. And you'll be like, oh, well, yeah, I know. I was on this.
I know his name. I just don't remember the name of the podcast. Tyler sure. James Weisler.
Well, that's all that's important.
Yeah, he did some improv in Chicago in your old stomping grounds.
Oh, all right. That's nice. That's nice. Let's see if improv comes back.
Yeah, right.
Speaking of comebacks, let's see if Nebraska come back. We had a couple things to talk about with off football sports. The baseball team's kicking the shit out of everybody. I don't know, you know.
I haven't followed the game yet today.
But they're scoring a lot of runs, hitting home runs. So this would be a good time to start following Nebraska baseball, I think, because their coach is.
I like Will Bolt.
He seems to be a difference maker.
Yeah, I mean, things looked pretty promising in that real early start to last year. I mean, we only got so much of the season, but I felt good about that start of the season last year. I wish they could have gotten a whole year, but I like them. They're fun to watch. I'm looking to see.
I'd love to see a resurgence of baseball. If they could make the game a little more interesting overall, I think they should lower the mound again because that will reduce the home runs and the strikeouts. Now, they did that in 1969 after Denny McClain won 30 games and Bob Gibson had a 1.12 ERA. And they were like, okay, no one's scoring any runs. Also, it was after Mays and Mantle. Their heyday was done. And so a lot of big names were not – a lot of home run sluggers, coincidentally, were not in play at that time. But they lowered the mound. And I think if you lower the mound again, you're going to get more contact. And it's going to be not as hard contact because it's not as hard a pitch. So it's going to stay in play more. And that's really when the game's more interesting.
I used – to agree, but the way the game is played now, where everyone is like, they know it's kind of like station to station once the ball is in play. Like, it seems like position players kind of loaf a little bit with like okay, not going to get to this one, or I am going to get to this one, and then it's like just a soft toss in, and then the players running out of the box just kind of half-heartedly jog.
It's more like softball now.
Yeah, and that part, so I don't know that I necessarily enjoy it when it's in play. I like a good pitching kind of chess match and potential strikeouts.
But those are done. You don't get those anymore. Like, you can get it with the strikeouts. Like, Mark Burley had a perfect game and a no-hitter. Mark Burley didn't throw more than 91. But he kept the ball in play. He had good fielders in his perfect game. There was a great game that robbed a home run and stuff. Like, I just think you get more variety because now it's all fastball pitchers. That's it. You might have a strikeout curve or something, but it's all heat because you're throwing downhill off that mound. I think if you lower the mound, you encourage a knuckleball pitcher is just as effective off a flat ground as he is off a mound.
Well, I love seeing like junk.
And there's no junk anymore, but you get more junk.
But I mean, most like major league type hitters can hit heat.
Yes. Yes. And that's what it's become. It's softball, except it's fast pitch softball where if a guy makes contact, the ball's going to go a long way, but he's also going to miss contact a bunch. Like, if you had junk ball pitchers more, think of all the – now, you might bring back, you know, cutting the ball and spitballs and stuff. But like Satchel Paige, at the end – I just read his a biography of his not long ago. And he won a World Series at, like, 42, which was probably, like, 44. And he had nothing at that point except he would do a difference in his pitching stint. So he'd hold for 2 seconds – and then he'd throw it or he'd quick pitch and he just kept guys off balance. And I think there was more personality and fun in the game then.
Oh, there's a reason. I agree with you. There's a reason Eddie Harris is my favorite character from Major League.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's something to that. Now everybody's Nuke LaLoosh and Nuke LaLoosh is fine if there's one Nuke LaLoosh. But when you have a bunch of Nuke LaLooshes, It's just Meathead Factory.
I love how we're using like 80s baseball movie characters to describe
how we feel about baseball. And it shows how long it's been since there's been a good baseball movie.
Dude, most sports movies suck.
They do.
Like, I think it's a breath of fresh air that like Ted Lasso was actually good.
Yes. And to be fair, it wasn't good because of the sports. It was a sport that most people don't know. So there was just enough soccer for you or I or my brother who watches soccer. But it was also the story where they're like, oh, this could be a baseball team, a football team.
Yeah, the sports scenes weren't actually that great. No.
You know where they play, right?
Yeah, Selhurst, right?
It's Crystal Palace, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, we have your brother chiming in as Jurgen Klopp now.
Beautiful, especially when we were just talking about Ted Lasso and soccer.
What's up?
Is Mike he here? Canale? Is he in?
Can you hear me?
I can hear your kids very well, too.
Well, that's always part of Mike's experience. You got to give us some video, Jurgen.
Well, let me ask you this.
Are you naked?
Does the video get recorded? Is that what it gets sent out, or is it just the audio?
It's the audio, but we do put up the video. Are you naked?
Except when
sort of.
Oh.
When I have to edit it, the video doesn't go up.
Turn it back. Good. Oh, that's
true. I want you to edit it and see my body, Patrick.
No, why are you shirtless? Is your mother-in-law still there?
Oh yeah, she requested.
Oh, come on.
No, she left.
You got to turn and flip.
No, I have. So we got Anthony in the bike.
You're not listening to me.
Why.
What? Turn and flip it. Turn the thing and flip it so it's
like this.
There you go.
Oh, why did you do that?
So that we have you on what do you call it? Oh, come on. My brother's just showing his armpits. We were just talking about Ted Lasso for a second. The reason that you should come on today, Mike, is because Nebraska's not great now. But you root for a soccer team that has a historic championship pedigree. But it went through, 20 years of misery? 30 years. And then they are back now on top of the world. So just explain a little bit of that process of Liverpool.
Well, yes. They were the up until... 19 okay good for you up until 1990 they were the winningest team in all of England. They had won by then. I think they won 17 English championships, far ahead of Manchester United, who were second at that point. Then there were some changes to the league, and you know, they had a few finishes where they finished second, but 30 years went by without a championship. Now they
a little bit of middling success, changes to the league, maybe similar to changing conferences.
Yes, I bet it's probably very similar. You know, it's different. It's a little different in you know, European soccer, that there are other options for trophy winning. You know, there are, as Pat
it'd be like a Big 12 North Championship.
Right, exactly. There's like the Big 12 North Championship, and then the full Big 12, and then
the preseason NIT in basketball. They have little tournaments and stuff like that you can win. Congratulations to Memphis, by the way, for winning the NIT this year, Penny Hardaway.
Oh, good for him. They did win about halfway through their misery of not winning the domestic title. They did win the biggest title in European soccer, is called the European
Champions League.
And so they did win that. They did win that, sort of came from out of nowhere, kind of Cinderella team that year. So they
That would be like if every conference winner then entered a tournament. You know, like
you mean
if
the NCAA tournament,
your big thing,
but like talking football.
Well, I was talking about for football. Yes, okay. You're right. In basketball, you're right, Mike. You're right, though, Pat. Soccer's more like basketball, and it's
a little like both, really, in the way, like Pat said, like Big 12 North versus the,
yeah,
you know, there's like these, yeah, little like milestones, but the big one is the national championship, the, yeah, you know, the, yeah, but anyway,
and it's different styles in each conference too versus different styles in each league.
Absolutely. But you know, you get the right coach, and what happened was, after years and years, first of all, it's a little different than college. Is a good owner finally came in and bought the team, who was,
well, could be, which like, is like the a good athletic AD director
or president,
right? Right. So, an owner that came in, it was, I know Joe hates this, but it was the Henrys who owned the Boston Red Sox, now own Liverpool. But look what they did in with the Red Sox.
You should hate it too, by the way, what? Mike. You should hate it too.
I don't like. No, I don't. I like that they. I mean, they turned the Boston around too. I mean, there was something that they were not afraid.
Oh, so now you're a Red Sox fan. No. This is where it comes
out. I think I like them as owners better than I like the Steinbrenners.
Who is the Theo Epstein in this situation then?
Well, that's a good question. So they have I don't know what they call it. What do they call it, Pat? Like, it's not the general manager, but it's the
chairman.
Well, so Klopp, who's their coach, works really alongside, is the guy who kind of, he does so much work on the, you know, finding the right players for the right
money.
Well,
that's like a football GM.
Yeah.
And most soccer teams are more like the Patriots, where the coach has a lot of influence as well.
Yes. But Klopp works very hand in hand with this guy. It's just a really good, it's just a good team, you know, and it's
top, one and it's of the top down. They got good.
One of the other similarities in college football and soccer is how frequently, if a team goes south quickly, they'll fire the coach and look for something new again with a new reset and a new, yep, style of play, which can push you back further and further and further again. So I think what if Nebraska really holds on to, now jumping to Nebraska, if they're really patient with Frost, give him, you know, instead of yanking him after 4 or 5 years, give him a decade and like let him get
Jesus.
Everything. Give him, you know, that's 2 or 3 time. Decades. Then maybe.
Here's the, but I mean, I realize you're trying to be a wise ass, but here's my only thing there. And I do think Nebraska needs to ride this out for a little while, but I do wish I would see like some sort of like growth and change from some of the problems that you see with Frost, like some of the errors that have plagued him early on. It doesn't seem like there's a huge willingness to learn and grow from his mistakes. Are fine. Like, I'm like, whatever, but like, man, there's just a hard headedness.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, I think, prevalent in football quite a bit. And probably all sports, there's a conservatism with what works. And it's rare that you have a Johan Cruyff or a Mike Leach who comes in and just completely changes everything. But in talking about this, you know, it is, you do need success from the top down. Osborne had all the you know, and except for his late 70s, almost getting fired. Once he was successful in the 80s, he had all the support he needed. In talking about this, you know what would be kind of interesting to me is if each of these Power Five conferences had an affiliation with a lower conference and you did relegation that way, where it's like Northern Illinois wins their thing, they're a Big Ten team next year.
Right.
And yeah, the team that finished last is now in the whatever Mac conference. That would be freaking great.
We've talked about that on here before.
I love the idea of that. Here's the only difference. See, I think it would be, that would be better in a sport like baseball or basketball or football, where there is a carrot dangling for you finishing in last, where you get the first pick. In right, college sports, it's closer to Europe in that there is no picks. There is nothing. You know what I mean?
It's all free agency, so there
is recruiting. No incentive at all to lose. I really think relegation would be great in our major sports in this country.
I think it would, and because again, it's like so many things. We're very stubborn, and maybe this is, you know, is an American quality that sometimes is good, but Europe has been around longer than us, and their sports leagues have been around longer than us. Like the metric system is a good example too. Like, that works better.
Well, here's the other.
Here's
the other reason that doesn't add. So, the other very American quality is putting business interests first, and it's a way more sound investment to buy into an American professional sports team, because you know, no matter how badly you bungle it, it will still be worth
the league
crazy billions of dollars. You buy the New York Knicks and they suck, you'll still be in a huge market in an immensely valuable league. You could run them as poorly as James Dolan and still sell them for probably $2 billion.
Why are you saying that hypothetically? That's all true. Everything you've just said is true.
Except he won't sell them.
Right.
But
remember the guy who owned the Red Sox who didn't really own go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, like,
I was gonna say, so, there's a guy who bought the Dodgers on credit and sold them and made $1 billion and had no money at all. It was amazing.
And basically the only reason he sold them is because of the divorce settlement.
His divorce, right.
Yeah.
Right. But he made more in the half that he got than he bought them for.
I mean,
right.
Grifters. They're these people are grifters.
But say you
high buy, level grifters. Yep. It's easier to grift at the higher levels.
But say you buy Leeds United, which is in the Premier League right now, and then they go through a rough patch, or Sheffield United, which really is about to go through it. Like, and then you go down, to the next level, and then you say you have two bad years in a row, sort of like Sunderland did, and you're down two leagues below the Premier League.
That would be like Nebraska being lost in the FCS.
Yes.
Or nearing Division II. And that's like a huge amount of lost revenue. And that's a major risk.
Oh, God.
And that's why
teams won't want to enter into that. Because most rich people are bad businessmen and only are good at business because they have money. So if you actually put in a bar that they have to meet, like a guy like Dan Snyder would never agree to relegation because he'd be relegated every time due to his ineptitude.
Yes.
Dolan might just agree
Dolan
to it because
a great example.
Dolan might just agree to it because he would be too dumb to believe that they could actually go down, even though it would be a terrible business.
And he figured that
Dolan also,
JB and the straight shots could open up every game.
That'd be great. They need the money.
That's his blues band, by the way.
They so many of them were talking about our second generation wealth too. You know, Mark Cuban never has this problem. He made his own money. He's self-made man. You know, there are
and you notice that he's a more innovative team.
Well, yeah, the Mavericks were terrible.
I said this to you before.
Yep.
But listen, here's what Mark Cuban, I'm gonna write an article in Sports Dump about this. And here's what their magic is. I've said this. In the NBA, if you have a superstar who's American, no city is going to hold an allure because they've been in America. If you get a European superstar, they come to Dallas. That's America for them. Mm-hmm. They don't need to go to another city. Porzingis, Nowitzki.
Giannis,
European, and Luka. That's how you keep your superstar. You get James Harden, who's from Arizona and wants to, like, there's no allure to staying in one city. If you're Luka, it's a foreign country. So America is Dallas to you.
Yeah.
You don't need to go to another city afterwards. You're going back to your home country in the offseason or whatever. So I think Cuban on purpose, because he traded for him. He traded two firsts to go up and get him, because I think he knows that the way to get longevity is to have players who have no American sensibilities.
Well, unless you sell the idea that there's no state income tax.
Well, that's for Texas. That's also, you're right. But Giannis is a good example too. He could have gone to Miami.
Yep.
He could have gone to a team in Texas and had no, he stayed there again, because it's not as big a deal for them to move cities once they're in America.
Also, like if you draft the two, you can continue to give them max contracts, whereas if they go elsewhere, they can't take as much. That's been the effort to keep stars for in sure. the cities where they're from.
No doubt.
I wonder if there was a study that immigrants who move to America tend to stay in the city they move to versus people who are born in America tend to move to other cities. I just wonder if that's a generality.
Well, think about your own ancestors. Our ancestors, or at least our Italian ancestors, they went and stayed in small town New York, where other people from their village went, and you know, they didn't leave until you and I left.
Right.
Well, Nebraska is interesting because you have communities. I mean, it's varied over the years, but you know, you have communities that like Wilbur, which is the Czech capital of Nebraska, O'Neill, which is the Irish capital of Nebraska. You have all
good
these
name for the Irish capital.
Yeah, I thought that was
you have like all these like sort of German enclaves, but
there is no Italian capital. It's Omaha. My parents used to talk about
South Omaha in particular.
They had to drive to Omaha to get Parmesan cheese in the late 70s when we lived in Nebraska and Lincoln.
When they lived in Tennessee, Grandma had to send them like
tomatoes
and stuff. There is
a Genoa, Nebraska.
Genoa.
Well, Genoa, Pat. In Nebraska, it's Genoa.
Of course. Well, that tells you all you need to know.
Well, yeah. There's
Genoa salami.
There's a Prague, Nebraska.
It's got a very Midwestern pronunciation to everything.
Prague. Yeah, we went down over to Prague.
Right. You know, I think though most people, I'd say the majority of people don't leave far from where they grew up.
Probably not. You know, my daughter thought that Prague rock was spelled like the city.
Which daughter?
The older one. I sent her a bunch of yes stuff, and she's like, "I'm really liking Prague rock." And I was like, "You know, it's not all from the city in Prague."
No, she was talking about the city band of Rammstein.
Right, Roms, yes.
No, they're German.
Right.
That's a hopeful story. If you waded through all of the minutia there, what Mike is saying is that you can be a team that had dominance at one point, but it probably takes a lot. All the pieces have to fall back into place. Now, I think Moose is the right guy. I still think Frost is the right guy. You're right. Time might be the thing. The question is, has the system passed us by?
Here's the one thing I would say that I don't know if Frost has that I think Klopp does have. Klopp, who's the manager, the coach at Liverpool. Classic. He's a guy who I think is incredibly open to change. And I don't know if Frost has that. That's the major difference.
Well, it's an improv workshop.
Yeah.
Well, that's also the difference. It feels like between Frost and Osborne, because like Osborne, like from a personal standpoint, is very stuck in his ways, clearly. Like he's never ever going to be open to certain, but from as a coach he was very progressive and like really evolved. It's gonna require that from Frost, and I haven't seen that yet. I do think yes, dude needs time. I do think, and I've said this on here a thousand times before, you got to have patience, but also 4 straight losing seasons to start your tenure would probably be like, you could pretty much close the
anybody
book,
else
think,
is probably
point.
Gone
well, you know,
everybody else is gone. It's at that well, point maybe Frost survives it, but
Devon, yeah.
Callahan had 2 losing seasons in that amount of time and was gone, like
yeah. Right. What's his name had no losing seasons. Pelini.
Yeah, but
that's
a
different thing.
Well, I also think too, for as static as his records were, and I know a lot of people think I'm super negative about Pelini, so I don't want to hit on this too long or hard, but like for his records staying the same, the it was negative progress with him, because like if you compare that second year team that was close to beating Texas and then also in that same season should have beaten Virginia Tech in Blacksburg and lost a couple other close games and then just like pasted Arizona in the bowl game. Compare that season to like his final couple at Nebraska, where, you know, they're surrendering 1,000 yards to Melvin Gordon. Those are not, right. Those are not equal seasons, even if the records are similar.
Yeah. And the way he was reacting was starting, you know, everybody wanted out. And the funny thing is everyone has suffered since that parting, even though it was probably the right thing to do. Oh, definitely. Nobody's benefited at that point after that.
Maybe Carl.
So
Carl.
Yes. Carl's doing all right.
I've got a soft spot for Carl Pelini.
Me too.
I think I pissed him off with a thing that it seemed like it came back to, like it got back to him, like a thing that I wrote for Coronation once, like after he got in trouble another time. But honestly, like, I have a soft spot for like that flawed nature. Like, he's clearly a flawed human, but like, I think he's a good coach and he seems like a decent human that just, you know, gets hurt by things. Like, I have respect.
Just because you do coke doesn't make you a bad person. I'm going to stand by that.
Yeah, for sure. And you know,
now if you're a cartel leader, that makes you bad.
Yes. Bo Pelini's a good guy too. Just a bad temper.
Yeah. He really seems to want to blame a lot of people besides himself. And
I think the pressure of Nebraska over the years got to a guy like that, who's not necessarily, not that Frost is Mr. Johnny handle the press, but he's got a bigger cushion than Pelini did. And I think Nebraska is a very high pressure place. And for a coach, they're probably like, what the fuck, man? This is Nebraska and they're coming at me, but that's Nebraska.
And it's funny too,
because he had the persecution complex. Nebraska wasn't coming after him until he started coming after Nebraska.
Yeah.
But it was, we don't know the behind the scenes pressure.
He wanted to blame just the institution and the location and everything. It's like, man, just, you can't, like, don't make excuses. That's if there's one thing Nebraskans don't want, it's excuses. And that's true.
Frost doesn't make a lot of excuses. That's true.
Are you saying that for real or sarcastically?
No, I don't think he's so bad with that.
He's gotten criticized for some stuff, but I gotta say, I know that we point to it, but goddamn, that first game getting rained out, like, it's just, when they do the documentary on this, whether the program ends or comes back, that game will be maybe the starting point of the documentary.
I will say this. I mean, having seen the evidence after the fact, there's no guarantee that Nebraska would have won that game. And that would have probably been even worse.
Sure. That could have been disastrous, but
we like to
look on the bright side.
Losing to Colorado to open things up is just such a shitty taste
and the way we lost and then twisting the guy's ankle and shit.
Yeah.
Speaking of Pelini for a second, ESPN, which they do all the time, they listed their top 100 players of the 90s, college defensive players, or of the aughts, whatever Sue was in.
Sue.
And he was number one. And they
he was number one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they do stuff like that. And I think Nebraska fans probably constitute about 40% of the traffic on a thing like that. So they have to put him at one or two, depending on if they want to troll Nebraska fans.
I mean,
I think they go back and forth.
Can't in good conscience, like, put anyone, I feel like, ahead of Sue, like, based on...
I read when the thing that they put in there about him, about his final season, like, there's four games they list, where it's like, how did he not win the Heisman?
He absolutely does.
He won, like, three or four games and almost won the Texas game on his own as a defensive tackle.
That Texas game.
He had an interception for a touchdown that year, I think.
Do you remember the that Texas game was... Now he wasn't hurt, but do you remember that Lawrence Taylor game where he dislocated his shoulder against the Saints and
yes,
still got three sacks?
Yes.
I mean, yes. It's like one of those.
He was just coming in on the other side. He would just dive into guys. Didn't
Sue
use his other shoulder.
Sue had a lot of LT in him without the coke. Sue now, I think Sue is, I think now, because of the Super Bowl win, is going to be a Hall of Famer.
Well, he should have been anyway.
Oh, definitely.
Like,
He's made more money on the amount of money he's made. Did you see him sack Aaron Rodgers in that game, in the where he just like he just tries to push through the guy?
Did he re-sign with the Bucs? Did they know? Did
Did. They got everybody.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, Sue, it's so like the impact that he's had in so many different ways. It wasn't just like his own, like he deserved to win the Heisman based on that Big 12 championship performance. But what he also did is he took the Heisman away from Colt McCoy. And then he also basically cost Texas that national championship, because Colt McCoy was seeing ghosts in that national championship game after that. He was not the same dude.
Sue basically like ruined his football career. real quick, Pat, who's that pitcher behind you?
Right here?
Yeah.
Gaylord Perry.
What is he on the Giants in that picture?
Yeah.
He died recently.
Yeah. Boy, so many baseball players died recently.
There's a Denny McClain floating around here too.
I was talking about Denny McClain, Mike. We were talking about baseball and I said they should lower the mound.
Jailbird Denny?
Yeah.
Yes.
What's funny is, so when I worked in minor league baseball, you're not supposed to ask for autographs. But like Gaylord Perry came and talked at the banquet that we had, and I just was like, hey man, can I? And so I got one. I think I got one for my dad too. And there's that picture of him. But Denny McClain came through and did like some promotional event at one of our games. He charged us.
I heard he was a rotten guy.
He went to jail for financial improprieties.
He was a bad dude. Just kind of, I don't know. But he won 30 games.
The Tigers have a history of bad dudes who are good players for them.
He knew his value. He knew his value, apparently.
Lance Parrish.
Was Parrish a bad guy?
No. I just
say. I tell you who belongs to the Hall of Fame is Lou Whitaker. Yes, he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Speaking of Detroit Tigers, Cecil Fielder was a guy who I would see every time that my dad and I would go down to Kauffman to watch the Royals. Like, I swear, every time we went down there, they were playing the Tigers, and then Cecil Fielder would hit one a mile.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Megan's brother played Little League with Prince Fielder.
No kidding.
Oh, my God. That must have been amazing.
Yeah.
Everything's a home run.
Yeah. That's so funny. you know who her softball coach was, too, is Kirk Gibson was a coach one year where she played softball.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I wish
he's a major league manager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wish a softball player like playing for him would like have the wherewithal to like, if they hit a homer, do his like cheesy 80s fist bump.
From that. I mean, that's the only at bat he had in that World Series, and it won a game and then they swept him.
Yeah. Talk about
a momentum thing.
One of the things I love about sports is that psychology thing where, you know, oh my God, how did they just get that goal? And then everyone started looking at everyone else. That is an amazing thing when it happens for your team, when it happens against your team.
Yes, against your team. You just want to.
That is a terrible feeling.
As a fan of Nebraska and Everton, while I was still watching a lot of NFL, the Vikings.
A lot of disappointment there.
Hey, Vin, come inside.
Abdullah signed back with the Vikings.
Yeah, he did. Amir Abdullah.
Come in. Okay. Come in here, Vinny. Come inside real quick.
All right. Hey, I don't want to talk to Mike's kids. All right. So we did the soccer thing.
We were talking legacies. I feel like that's a good sort of transition into what you were talking about earlier with Howard Schnellenberger dying.
Oh, yes. Schnellenberger died.
When did he die?
A couple days ago.
Boy, I thought he died a long time ago.
It would make sense. He's looked old for a long time.
Yeah,
but he
looked old. 83.
It's very true. He looked about the same from 83. And he did a lot since then. He built back up the Louisville program. He built the Miami program up. And there's some Florida program he took up from scratch.
I think it was Florida Atlantic.
If he doesn't win that game, it's just interesting how completely different his legacy and Miami's legacy might be, because well, that made funny. The U.
Well, it's funny too, though. He then, you talk about the spots in between. He was a part of that really bad era at Oklahoma post probation. He and John Blake,
yes,
who recruited Sue, yeah. Like they were part of some bad teams at Oklahoma.
Well, yeah. Those teams were reminiscent of these last bunch of years for Nebraska. I mean, yeah, just like
except we didn't go on probation for it. We did it all on our own.
Right. Yeah. Oklahoma cheats when they win or when they lose. And the thing is, for Schnellenberger, it probably proves that he doesn't, a program that had standing didn't work for him. He had to take something from the depths and bring it up. You know, there's different kinds of coaches. You know, he's a guy who rebuilds things. It's like in baseball. Well, yes. But Parcells gets them to the championship. You got a guy like, who's the Yankees manager and the Orioles manager who
Showalter.
Buck Showalter. You get him to take a team up to a certain level. And then when they're good, you get rid of them and you bring somebody else in. Now, Schnellenberger won the national title at Miami, but he didn't have that kind of success elsewhere.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And then there's those coaches who can only take an established team, Phil Jackson.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. You know, doesn't have the guts to build a team.
Well, or Pep has Guardiola. The wisdom to go find the best players in the league.
Pep Guardiola, you know, another coward. I call those kind of coaches cowards. I'm a Klopp guy. He takes the team in the second division in Germany, puts him in the first division.
So Nick Saban is a coward to you.
What's that?
Nick Saban's a coward.
Nick Saban is a complete coward. A weak man. I would like to fight him physically.
Well, you and Tweety have both challenged Nick Saban to a fight on this very podcast.
73-year-old man.
I'll give him three of his biggest linemen to be on his team, and I'll take you three, and we'll win.
The funny thing is, so speaking of the Sue Heisman thing, I think I had done some stand-up shows in New York that night, and then in between I went to the Heisman stuff to see like Sue and Bo and all them walk in. Well, Saban walked in with Mark Ingram. Saban is a little dude. He is tiny. And Frank Solich. Both.
Like, are you comparing him to the Giants he's around all the time? Or is he?
No,
but Mark Ingram's not a real tall guy.
No, Nick Saban was legit. Mark Ingram, tiny.
He's like 5'8". He's like dad's height.
Well, now you're calling my father tiny, Pat.
I have Saban probably shorter than that. Like,
really?
Sue made Bo look small, but like there were enough like normal sized people around there too. It wasn't just football players. Yeah. And like Saban just looked, and also like I realize I'm 6.5 feet tall, but I can recognize who's tall compared to me and who's just like tall, period. Sure. Yeah. By the way,
I watched the Andre the Giant documentary. He's tall.
Yeah, or was. By the way, as an FYI, I just used my personal Zoom for this instead of the Cobcast one, because I assumed it was just going to be you and me. You don't have the time limit when it's only two. Then once Mike jumped in, then we got the 40-minute time limit.
It doesn't start when I jump in. It starts when you guys start.
I think it started when you
just
jumped
once
in.
Mike. Oh, okay.
Yeah, because we've been going for over an hour.
We have, or just about an hour. One other thing I wanted to mention is that we got a transfer from Xavier in the basketball portal.
Yeah, I'll take it. I mean,
where did Salas go? Did he commit?
Gonzaga.
Oh, okay.
I can't blame him. Yeah,
they might win the national title.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a cool campus.
I don't know. I've never seen it.
And
Jesuit school, right?
Yesterday.
What's that?
I said, too bad Loyola lost yesterday.
Yeah, it is too bad. I have him in my all sports league too, so that hurt.
Right, plus, I like that big mustachioed Krutwig, who looks like it, Mike, if you grew a little bit and grew a mustache.
Oh, yes. Yes, you could be Cameron Troutwig. Now, you think he makes an NBA team?
Ryan Reeves did.
Yeah, but that was when they would draft guys like that. I don't know.
I think Troutwig will make a huge living in Europe.
Europe, I agree.
And why the hell wouldn't you do? Like, you end up in a different cool European country each year. You make a couple hundred K. You don't have to pay for housing while you're there.
In a lot of those countries, he'd be one of the handsomer men.
he's gonna go crush it in Serbia.
All of those Soviet countries where the radiation makes all men lose their hair at 37. he's gonna really blend in.
Yeah. Well, we should probably wrap it up so we don't run out of time. It's good to see you, Mike, and I'm glad you got a shirt on now.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I felt it needed it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not an insult to your manliness. It just, felt like we were going to have to join you if you didn't throw it on. And it's still not fully warm here yet. It's getting there.
Mm. Plus, if anyone saw the video of the three of us, the blinding light would probably blind them, literally.
Yeah. So follow us on Twitter at Big Red Cobcast. We're on Facebook.com/Cobcast. Go to Patreon.com/Big Red Cobcast and give us some
just
money.
Just $1 a month forever.
You are our Sally Struthers, Joe.
In so many ways.
Joe, you're the fat version of Sally Struthers.
Joe doesn't like that one as much.
That's all right. That's all right. That's okay.
You gonna say it with us this time, Mike?
No.
I'll say it for Mike.
Okay. Fatty rides a bus.
Fatty rides a bus.
Fatty See you guys. Rides a bus.
This has been a Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit boardwalkaudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.
The Sea of Red, Husker Nation.
See what makes Nebraska fans the greatest fans in college football with a new movie directed by Lincoln native Ryan Tweedy.
Through These Gates.
The perfect gift for Husker fans.
Available on DVD now at huskerfilm.com.